Well, the gospel for the next last Sunday in the church year is, as Paul said, the Lucan eschatological discourse, or at least part of it, in Luke 21. Luke has a couple of different places in his gospel where he puts teaching of Jesus that, for instance, in Matthew is found in one spot. So, but in some ways, the same challenges, I think, for preaching and teaching. The pericope, as appointed, starts at verse 5 and it goes through 28. And to be honest, the problem comes with the interpretation of verse 25 and following. Conveniently, I suppose, the pericope does not include 29 to 33. And the problem there is really verse 32, where after talking about these cosmic signs, Jesus says, "Truly I say to you that this generation will certainly not pass away until all these things happen." And so if you check out the commentaries, people have different ways of trying to deal with the issues involved here. And when we get to there, I'll tell you what I think. That's all I can do. Not too surprisingly, I think that Luke doesn't disagree with Matthew, if I can say it that way. But this is also a challenge. I'd say it this way: this is a challenging text to preach on because so much of it is historically specific, and everyone agrees on that. That is, Jesus is here predicting the destruction of the temple, which took place, you know, at the hands of the Roman armies in what we call the First Jewish War, ultimately in AD 70. So how do you preach a text that prophesies, you know, divine judgment like that and apply it? And I think there are some ways we can do that, but it might be actually incumbent upon a preacher to do, you know, a significant amount of explaining, and when you try to deal with this this gospel reading. But we'll just kind of take it as we go, starting at verse 5. And Luke, of course, always presents the vocabulary challenges, so you have to be really good to get by without your lexicon, which I'm not, so I didn't. Verse 5, start with the genitive absolute, and as, or maybe because, certain ones were saying about the temple that, you could take the hati, I suppose, as indirect discourse or as a causal. They were talking about the temple because, or they were saying about the temple that. And now the verb is kekosmetai from kosmeo, which means to adorn or to beautify. Because it had been adorned, now two datives of means, I suppose, with noble or beautiful stones and votive offerings. That was the first word I had to look up. Jesus said, so that some of the people with Jesus are admiring the temple. Matthew and Mark tells us that some of the disciples. And in context where Jesus has just condemned the scribes for their love of ostentation at the end of chapter 20, and indirectly at the beginning of 21 for their love of money, because you have the story of the widow's mite, so to speak. So Jesus is here countering an admiring attitude toward the second temple with a very severe oracle of judgment. And of course, Jesus has been in Jerusalem. He's been attacked by waves of opponents in chapter 20. Again, it's similar to all the synoptists' portrayal of how Jesus is being progressively rejected by the leadership, especially of the people in Jerusalem. So he said, verse 5 ends with apen. And then we have a little bit of a hanging construction at the beginning. Tautaha theoreta, these things which you see. And then Jesus sort of starts back up. You could take tauta as a kind of a adverbial accusative, and maybe translate it with respect to these things which you see, comma, eleusantai hemerai, days will come. Eleusantai is just from the future deponent of erchomai. So it goes erchomai, eleusomai. Days will come in which uk aphethesetai lithos, a stone will not be left epilitho upon a stone, hus u katalithesetai, which will not be thrown down. So there it is. There's the prediction. You like the way this stuff looks? Judgment is coming. Right? Destruction is coming. And so there's a follow-up question, verse 7. Epe rotizanda auton legantas, and they asked him, saying, Didaskala, teacher, pata un tauta estai, when will therefore these things be? Just a little grammatical point. Notice that tauta is neuter plural and goes with a singular verb, estai. Kai te ta semeon, and what, supply, will be the sign, hatan, whenever these things, mele, these things are fixin to dinamai, about to happen. So that's really the topic for most of the pericope, and maybe all of it. And see, there's where the interpretation problem occurs in verse 25, to which we'll come directly. So they're asking about, okay, not one stone will be left upon another. When? What's the sign? What's going to happen? And then Jesus proceeds to answer. But in his answer, he both warns them not to overinterpret the terrible events that would take place in Judea, but he also offers promises of his own presence, which I think can be an opportunity for application to Christians also today. Paul, similar to what you were saying, when they find themselves in the context when the right is ignored and it seems like, you know, the evil is winning out. So Jesus answers. First thing he says in verse 8, but he said, Blepeta, watch, me plane theta, lest you be led astray. So the first danger is that they'll misinterpret the tumults that are happening in the first century leading up to AD 70. For many, Jesus says, will come in my name, saying, Ego eimi, I am he. And ha kairos engekin, the time has come near. So there'll be eschatological charlatans, if I can say it that way. A problem which we're not rid of yet, of course. Me porutheta o piso auton. Do not journey out after them. verse 9. And when ekusete, whenever you hear wars and disturbances, me ptoetete, do not be ptoeod. I had to look that one up. Do not be disturbed. Why? For these things are necessary to happen first. A little woodenly there. But not immediately the telos, the end. So again, you know, you could actually, I suppose, take that much and apply it. You could say, look, we're kind of in a similar situation today. That is, you get these waves of eschatological expectation. This would have been an easier text to preach in 1999. Remember when we were on the road doing we called it our eschatological road show. And it was Y2K and Left Behind and all that nonsense. And so, you know, this in itself is a good word. When you see terrible things happening, wars, Jesus is about to talk about earthquakes and famines, don't overinterpret that. See? It's just to sound like Paul, it's just the creation groaning, you know, in travail, right? The end is not immediately. verse 10. Then he kept on, or was saying to them, ethnos egerthesetai ep ethnos, a nation will rise against a nation. Now remember that ethnos is third declension neuter. So the nominative singular and the accusative singular are the same form, which is why you can have ep ethnos. Ep plus the accusative can readily mean against. And basileia, kingdom or rule, against kingdom. Seismoi temagal, and great earthquakes and cell phones, kata tapus, from place to place, limoi, famines, kai loimoi, pestilences will be, esantai, fabitrate kai ap uranu semea megala estai, and fearful things and from heaven signs, big ones, will happen. Right? And of course we have some evidence especially from the first century, Josephus talks about, you know, strange happenings that led up to the Jewish war, and so it was an interesting and terrible time. And during that time, the disciples themselves will suffer persecution, and that's verses 12 through 19. And before all these things, pra tuton pantun epibaluzen epimas tas kerasotum, they will put upon you the hands of them, and they will persecute, as they para didantas, a participle, as they deliver into the synagogues and jails. Ap agamenus has to have as its referent the pronoun humas, two lines before. It's you, as you are being led before or in the presence of kings and rulers for the sake of my name. Verse 13, apobasitai, apobino can mean to turn out. You know, something turns out for a reason. It's that the future is deponent, so it's an active meaning. But this will turn out for you unto a witness. See, there, in a sense, you already have the first ray of hope. That is to say, as bad as this gets, God is still at work, Christ is still at work, and using it for his purpose. And because of that promise, verse 14, theta, this is when you don't know, if you see a little word and it's got a theta in it, it's probably a verb from tithemi, right? And that's what this is. It's the aorist imperative active second plural, right? Theta. Therefore, put in the hearts of you, and here's what you put there, me pro melaton apologethenai, not to get ready in advance to make a defense. Right? And here's why you don't have to when you're going into persecution. Egogar doso, you mean, for I myself will give to you a stoma, a mouth, and wisdom, which, now we have to drop down to the next line to get the subject. Hoi anti kemenoi, see that? Those who oppose. Those who oppose you, no, back up a line, will not be able, dinesantai, to resist or refute, anti stenai, a ant epain. Jesus is giving a very specific promise here, first of all to the 12 and others perhaps there on the mountain with regard to persecution. I think you can probably generalize to a certain extent, although this is not an excuse for pastors to not prepare their sermons. Right? The appropriate scripture for that is, thou shalt not tempt the Lord thy God or put him to the test. And the other Bible verse is, thou shalt not be an idiot. A pastor actually said to me one time in public, he said, I don't start working on my sermons until Saturday. And I didn't say it, but I thought I should have said it. What I thought was, I would have thought that God's people deserve better than that. So the other thing I wanted to say is, you don't look like a genius, but I'm certainly not, and just looking around this room, you're all nice people, but none of you strikes me as a genius either. So, yeah, no excuse for hard work. But again, you see the historical specificity. See, so it's actually a difficult text to make application, but see, you could make that kind of an application that, look, Christ will provide the things that are needed. He's not guaranteeing you that when you talk to your neighbor, he's going to put words in your mouth. But see, he's at work. He's always at work. No matter how bad.
And in Acts, you have a fulfillment of this with when they're before the authorities, I guess.
Yeah, yeah, and also Stephen, probably. Yeah. Yeah, that's right. You actually see it fulfilled in the book of Acts. Right. It goes on, the difficulty goes on, verse 16. And you will be paradidomed, you will be handed over, also by parents and brothers and relatives and friends, and they will kill, literally, out of you, which is a little bit of an ellipsis for some out of you. And now a periphrastic participle with the future of amen. You will be being hated, you will be hated by all on account of my name. Now, verse 18, because we have a positive clause followed on by a negative one, you can translate chi as but, so adversatively, but a hair of your head will certainly not perish. And then verse 19, in or by means of your endurance, ktesasta is from ktaomai, of all things, and it means to receive or get or acquire. Its deponent, you will acquire your lives. Now, in verse 18 and 19, you know, the context prohibits us from reading that literally because Jesus has just said that some of them will die. See? And so what he's saying is that no eternal harm can come to you, right? Even in a situation like that. So again, the application could easily be from the greater to the lesser. If God will be present with his servants in this kind of a context, will he not also be present with us, you know, in other difficulty? And now we get to the really historically specific stuff, verse 20. Hatan, again, plus the subjunctive, as we saw before. Whenever you see, now the direct object is Jerusalem, and this, the participle kuklumene is from kuklao, means to surround. Okay, it could be indirect discourse when you see that Jerusalem has been or is being surrounded by legions, stratopedon, armies. The force of it is clear enough. When you see this happening, see, that's the prediction. Jesus is standing on the Mount of Olives and probably in about 30 or maybe 33 saying these words. And then at the end of the chapter, he's going to say, all these things will, this generation will not pass away before all these things take place. See, so it's very historically specific. And now we have this terrible prediction of God's judgment upon the Reshaim, right? Those who oppose Jesus and refuse to repent. You can't oppose the Son of God with impunity. That's the deal. So whenever you see Jerusalem being surrounded by armies, then gnota, know that her desolation, its desolation, Engekin, has come near. And then, by the way, verse 21 begins to track very closely, word for word, with Matthew and Mark, Matthew 24 and Mark 13. Tata, then those in Judea, imperative, let them flee into the mountains, into the hills, and let those in the midst of her depart out. Ek koreo, another third person imperative, this time also plural. And let those in the regions not enter into her. Get out of Jerusalem. Get out of town. Right? Because the subject of the blinking verb in verse 22 is hautai. Those are the days of vengeance. To place thenai, so as all things which are being written or which have been written be fulfilled. Place thenai from pimplemi, I think, of all things. Verse 23. Woe to the ones who are having in stomach, to pregnant women, and to those who are nursing in those days. For a great ananke, distress, necessity, will be upon the land, and wrath upon this laos, this people. Referring to Israel, Judea, in the first century. And pezuntai, from pipto, the second principal part is Pezumai, so it's actually a deponent future. They will fall by or because of the mouth of the sword, and they will be carried into captivity into all the nations or into all the Gentiles. And Jerusalem will be pateod, trampled underfoot by the Gentiles, until the kairoi ethnon, the times of the Gentiles, be fulfilled. Of course, our dispensationalist friends make huge heyday out of this. I mean, the short answer is there's nothing in the context at all to support that hermeneutic. And I could actually refer you to the CTCR document on, I think it's just called The End Times, which a certain unnamed person drafted back in the 80s. That's a very fine resource in that regard. And also some recent work on the Left Behind series. Now, verse 25, here's the problem. Okay, verse 25, and. Now, a lot of commentators say, okay, now we've been talking about Jerusalem, and now, without warning, we're going to talk about the end of the world. And that might be right. See, you could that's an orthodox way of doing it. The other way to take it, just to make this very short, is to take the language of verses 25 to 28 as figurative, metaphorical, and still talking about the terrible judgment that God will visit upon Jerusalem. So again, it's not like one way is the right way or one way is the wrong way. It's just that it's a difficult passage. And probably more people find themselves forced by this extravagant language to say, okay, now Jesus, in a sense, without warning, has now shifted his focus to the end of time. But it is a difficult passage. So there will be signs in the sun and the moon and the stars, and upon the earth the distress of nations in perplexity of the noise of the sea and wave, as men faint, apopsikonton. It means to breathe out, and that can either mean die or faint, according to the lexicon. So a genitive absolute, as men faint from fear and expectation of the things coming upon the inhabited world. So no matter how you read it, a terrible time of divine judgment. For hai dunamis ton uranon, the powers of the heavens will be shaken. And then, verse 27, they will see, upsamai is the deponent future of harao, they will see the Son of Man as he comes on a cloud with power and much glory. Verse 28, as these things are beginning to ginomai, to happen, anakipsata, stand up, and eparata, lift up the heads of you, because your redemption is coming near. There's another note of hope that's also preachable. You know, God is never out of control. So no matter what you take the referent of these words to be, whether it's the terrible time in Jerusalem or terrible times preceding the end of the world, there's never a time when the disciples of Jesus can't lift up their heads, because they know that their redemption is, the final redemption, is drawing closer. As Paul says in Romans, our salvation is nearer than when we first believed. And the text actually ends there. The appointed lesson ends at verse 28. Which is fairly convenient because it's 25 after the hour. So again, a very difficult text. You know, I commend you to the commentaries, and again, it's not as though there's one sort of right Lutheran way to interpret, but the difficulty does seem to come in the few verses that follow about this generation, you know, not passing away. But at any rate, even in the most terrible times, still hope. How does Habakkuk end? Though the vine not produce, you know, and there be no calf in the stall, yet I will hope in my God. So, okay, very good.